Welcome to this week's episode of the Jewish Diaspora Report. On this week's episode, we talk about how I've gone extreme and the Rafa conundrum. Let's get started. I want to start this week's podcast off on a little bit of an interesting note. This past week, I was contacted by a follower, I guess I could call her. I won't use her name just to respect her privacy. She reached out to us a long time ago, closer to the beginning of this conflict. She identifies herself to be a Palestinian person living in Europe. And her and I had a lot of back and forth conversations that I felt were incredibly fruitful. We found a lot of common ground. I don't think either of us thought each other was extreme or were unwilling or unable to make concessions to issues on both sides of the argument. I actually thoroughly enjoyed these conversations because they were peaceful, respectful, informative. It was great to hear what someone else had to say because, of course, we all live within our little bubbles that we have. What's interesting that this week she had messaged me out of the blue because we hadn't talked in a very long time, and I was actually surprised and happy to hear from her. And she informed me that she stopped following us quite a while ago, and she said that I had become too extreme for her, and that I've clearly gone down what she called a rabbit hole. And I was actually very hurt by that. I don't know why it really affected me so much. I've never met this person. I really don't know who this person is. And if she's listening to this, I kind of hope, maybe she is, that she can hear that I really was touched by the fact that her and I would speak so regularly about these issues. And it hurt me pretty deeply that she says I'd become extreme. So when I went back to this follower and said, oh, I think I now understand what you're saying is, you are feeling that I'm more extreme now because I'm not talking as much about the issues on the ground for people of Gaza. I have said for a very long time, maybe not so much in this podcast, that there are people in Gaza, women, children who are not necessarily involved with Hamas, that are being affected by this problem. And maybe the reason I don't talk about it enough is because the reality is there's plenty of stuff online talking about the poor Gazans. I don't need to make a podcast about that because everyone sees it all the time. But on this week, I think I am going to have to talk about it a little bit because it really has to do with what's going on right now this week in the Rafa conundrum, I call it. There is no doubt that there is an issue today in Gaza with people living in a war zone. It's not really that complicated. War zones are never good places for people to live. And unfortunately, there are people who live in Gaza who are now in a war zone and have nowhere to go. And that is tragic. For anybody who maybe hasn't seen a map of the Middle East or of Israel or of the general area of Gaza, most of us are used to hearing the words Gaza City, Khan Yunis, Rafah, and we think of those as cities, which they are. But we don't realize that that's like saying New York City and Toronto and London. Yes, those are cities and they have tons of people in them, but there are also other places around that are suburbs, let's call it, or outskirts of those towns that are not necessarily in that town, but in that vicinity. So when we hear the word Rafah, which we're hearing a lot these days because it's sort of the last stronghold for Hamas and the last city that hasn't been entered by the IDF in order to clear it of Hamas, we have Rafah City, which is obviously a built-up area. It has homes, it has markets, it's, you know, a normal city by most standards. However, we have the outskirts of those towns that are still considered to be Rafah. This is the people who have come down from Gaza City, from Khan Yunis. They were asked by the Israelis to leave. Finally, Israel made it safe for them to leave. And they followed the orders and left and stayed out so that way Israel could attack the legitimate targets without hurting civilians. Most of us have heard this story before. It's old news. They fled and now they're living outside of the city of Rafah, but in the Rafah area, near the border, in what seems to be or what appears to be something like a tent city or a refugee camp, if you want to call it that. And these are the pictures we're seeing very frequently in the news. I'm not going to mince words and pretend like it's a beautiful place to be living. It's a war zone. It's terrible. No one wants to live there. It's brutal. However, we see this dichotomy between various images we see. When we talk about Rafah and you hear about Rafah, you'll hear about the terrible conditions. There's no food, there's no water. And then all of a sudden, literally the next day on social media, you see on typically pro-Israel Instagram accounts and things like that, a picture of beautiful markets filled with food and people eating donuts and all kinds of amazing things. And you're like, wait a minute, I thought they're starving. So acknowledging the fact that there are people in those DP camp areas, the tent cities, they are struggling to get food, which makes sense because they're living in a refugee camp sort of situation. However, the city of Rafah, the people who lived there for years in houses that had markets, those are still intact. Israel hasn't gone in and touched those. So the reality of this two type of city slash refugee situation obviously presents this weird situation where some people are saying people are starving, we have dead babies everywhere, and meanwhile, literally markets filled with food. Both can technically be true at the same time. You have the refugees who have left their homes from the north who have no money to go buy food in Rafah City, and then you have the people in Rafah who still have the ability to buy their own food and are living a little bit better of a life. I would suggest that this is obviously very biased and cherry-picked stuff. Not to say that you can't show what Rafah, the city with the beautiful markets, look like, and the people on a regular Saturday afternoon going through the markets and buying what they're buying, but also you can't show just the tent cities and then suggest, oh, this is all of Gaza, look at them all starving to death, because both would be a little bit disingenuous. So yes, there are people who have fled, who have nothing to their name, they have no money, they have no food, they have no home. And then you have the people who are living in Rafah relatively untouched. So now we can set the stage for what we're talking about. Rafah, the city, versus Rafah, the refugee area, are two different places. Unfortunately, the situation has not been made easier by Egypt. Of course, everyone likes to blame Israel for everything that goes on, and Israel is the big problem here. There's even lies that suggest that Israel is currently controlling the southern border. But the reality is Egypt has solidified their border, and I've talked about this on the podcast before. They built a super wall to ensure that no Gazans get in and have, from the start of this conflict, refused to open the Sinai, which is a massive area that they could easily build sort of temporary camps and whatever there, and refused to let people out of Gaza. So you can imagine this flood of people coming from northern Gaza to get away from the war, which is understandable because they should be leaving the war zone. And rather than being allowed out into the Sinai in order to have displaced persons camps there that you can get them food and water, Egypt has locked the door and stopped people from leaving. So that's what's created this Rafah displaced persons problem. Rather than giving them sources of food and water, they've kept them in the Hamas-controlled Gaza rather than let them into Egypt. We could talk in another podcast about why Egypt refuses to let a single Gazan in. It's a whole long history and a long story. They don't want to deal with the terrorism that Israel is currently dealing with. So they have locked their door and are holding people in. So why am I telling you this? Most of you know this already. It's no big surprise that there's a whole bunch of problems going on in southern Gaza right now. And the reason I'm telling you this is because I want to say that I'm not immune to the realities on the ground. Even if I don't talk about it every single week on this podcast, it is happening. My concern is that the reason it's happening is not necessarily because of Israel. Yes, Israel is in there in a war, in a conflict with a terrorist organization that roots itself in and around the area. By the way, just for the record, Rafah was a safe zone created by the IDF. And guess who showed up in Rafah? Hamas. So let's not pretend that Hamas has no role in this. Hamas has moved its fighters and the hostages throughout all of Gaza, by the way, using hospitals and ambulances to get them around without being caught, moved them south from all of the other places they were, now into that last stronghold. They also, by the way, still have all their weapons and their rockets and all the things in Rafah, moved it into a safe zone. So here's where we talk about the conundrum that they face. When you have a group that you're fighting that is hiding itself purposefully and moving with civilian populations, what do you do? Do you just say, well, sorry, you made it to the home base before we got a chance to get you, so I guess you're home free and we'll just pack our things and go home? Just because you're hiding in civilian populations doesn't mean you're home free, that you get away with anything. Israel is going to have to go in Another side effect or consequence of the fact that Hamas is hiding within Rafah is the fact that Hamas, who had prepared all of this stuff long ago in Khan Yunis, in Gaza City, hoping and assuming that when they hide under hospitals that Israel will not go in and they've got all their things there, now they are kind of scrambling. So they've moved all the way back to Rafah, maybe a place that they weren't necessarily expecting to be in. They thought Israel would be long pushed into a ceasefire ages ago. So they have to go and steal all of the food and equipment and stuff that should be going to the people. The hundreds of trucks that go in through Egypt, through Rafah, through the Rafah gate, are being taken by Hamas because they need to restock all their supplies, their fuel, their food for their fighters. All of that stuff needs to be restocked. And they've been stealing trucks. We've seen it hundreds of times. It comes through the border, and all of a sudden, a Hamas fighter with his gun gets on top, and they run away with it, and no one ever sees it again. Maybe shooting a few Gazans on the way if they dare touch any of Hamas's things. If you are one of the few people who are lucky enough to get some aid, or maybe you have some connections with the UNRWA or with Hamas, and you get a pallet full of food, you then get to go and sell it for a massive markup. Because of the other people being unable to get food, using the aid that's being given by the international world to make money in those markets. This is something that not many people are talking about, but the reality of people ripping other people off with the aid that they're getting from international communities. This is yet another reason why people from the tent city of Rafah can't afford the food that's coming in as aid that they are unable to get. Only making the situation much, much worse for the people in the tent cities, but not in Rafah. So not only are the people in Rafah not getting any kind of food or support or help or water, things like that on these trucks, but there's zero chance that they're going to make it all the way to the north of Gaza, and there are still some people in the north of Gaza, because Hamas is stealing it. There's no way that Hamas isn't going to take that truck, and it has that whole long way to go to get to the north. So the people in the north are legitimately suffering because they have no food and nothing can get to them. Israel has allowed things to come in through the northern border, which has had some issues. We have seen trucks go from the northern border into Gaza, into the north, in order to give people stuff. And in this case, because Hamas is for the most part gone, they are not stealing the trucks. However, there are Hamas and Hamas supporters who are actively shooting at people trying to take that aid, because to Hamas, the most important thing is that everybody is suffering. That is their get out of jail free card. The more people who suffer in Gaza, the more the United States and the world are putting pressure on Israel to stop and leave. So it's in their best interest to make sure that nobody gets any of that aid. And the amazing part is that after they shoot and kill people for trying to get aid, they blame Israel for it. And you hear all over the news, aid dropped from plane lands in Gaza, people shot by the IDF. The IDF bombs this group or that group while trying to get aid. It's literally all been debunked. There are videos showing Hamas people coming out towards an aid drop and shooting at people trying to take the aid, because they don't want people to actually be in good spirits or have plenty of food, because that is detrimental to their case. Hey, look, the world, our people are suffering and dying and starving to death. Stop Israel so we can have food. And one question that I really want to ask is, we talk endlessly about the UN and UNRWA, the Palestinian refugee laughable group that is intertwined with all the Hamas fighters and are literally Hamas fighters themselves. They're still in Gaza and they're still able to get aid. So there's a humanitarian crisis. While the UNRWA is in there, what are they doing exactly? All this aid that comes in, where is it going other than to Hamas? And what exactly are they doing other than probably getting it directly to Hamas? Essentially, the UNRWA is a mouthpiece for Hamas. They take in the aid from the world, tell the world how bad things are so they can get money for aid, give it to Hamas, and then spit out numbers that Hamas makes up about who's dying and how many are dead and how many terrorists weren't killed, because apparently there are no terrorists in Hamas anywhere in Gaza. Maybe I am extreme these days. I don't know. You guys feel free to message me on Instagram, message our account. Let me know your thoughts. I don't think I'm being that outrageous to know the facts on the ground. I am not giving Israel a free pass saying that they are not having any kind of issues or should do things slightly different or they're not perfect. I can accept that. But what I struggle with is this idea that by pointing out the issues that Hamas is causing and accepting the fact that the Gazan people are suffering, but it's at the hands of Hamas, does that make me extreme? Blaming the UN for being corrupt and not helping, does that make me extreme? I don't really know if I'm extreme, or maybe the situation has just gotten so bad and the misinformation that's going out has gotten so bad that it makes me need to speak out even louder in order to fight this complete BS coming out about all of these issues. Sometimes I feel like I want to pull my hair out because everybody is screaming, ceasefire now, we need to have a ceasefire, when Israel accepted multiple ceasefires. Israel has offered multiple ceasefires to Hamas who've turned everyone down. So what exactly is Israel supposed to do? How are we not blaming Hamas for this? We wouldn't even have a Rafah conundrum if it wasn't for Hamas going in there, or if they just accepted a ceasefire ages ago. How are these people who support the Gazan people not going like, you're right, let's get rid of Hamas. That should be our aim. And just a little sneak peek into the situation that's going on, that's exactly what Israel is trying to do. Get rid of Hamas. If Hamas was gone, this issue would be done and over with because the hostages would likely be released and the people of Gaza can go back to whatever normal life they used to have prior to Hamas. The United States and Germany have recently come out to suggest that Israel should not go into Rafah. And when we say Rafah, we don't mean go into those tent cities where people are living. Again, we're talking about going into the town that was untouched so far, relatively, and has a whole bunch of the leftover Hamas units, as well as their hostages, in Rafah. So the United States, Germany, other people, everyone who's yelling on a street corner is saying, you should not go into Rafah and save your people, or finish the job of removing Hamas, which I think is outrageous. What was all this fighting for? What was all these deaths for, of Israeli soldiers, of Israeli people, of Gazan people, some of which who are Hamas terrorists? Everybody is going to die for no reason if Hamas gets to stay in charge, because we're going to do this again in a year or two or five. These states who are calling for Israel to not go into Rafah because of the civilian possible casualties really shows the oxymoronic idea that they have, which is we support you A, defending yourself, B, getting your hostages back, C, removing Hamas, but also don't do the thing that will literally achieve all those goals. Don't go into Rafah, don't save your hostages, don't get rid of Hamas, don't make the Gazan lives better by removing Hamas. And somehow, I guess Hamas is just going to A, give back the hostages for no reason, B, leave power for, again, no reason, and then let their people be free and not live under a terrorist regime for no reason. Without Israel going into Rafah, this is literally never going to change. Life will just go back to October 6th, and we'll just be waiting for the next October 7th. In the end, honestly, maybe I am extreme. I don't know. I really can't tell if I'm becoming more extreme or just so frustrated with the anti-Israel BS that's going on around the world. We see Hamas, who's responsible for the attack that started this war. We see Hamas is responsible for stealing the aid from their people in order to continue attacking. We see Hamas unwilling and refusing to make any kind of legitimate deal that doesn't include Israel leaving forever and leaving them intact. Everything revolves around Hamas being unwilling and unable to give up their power and stop their genocidal calls against the Jews and Israel. I don't think I'm the one who's extreme. I think they are the ones who are extreme. The one in their charter who says, we want to kill all Jews and get rid of Israel. So of the two sides, sure, Israel is not perfect. I am not going to say Israel has done everything correctly and perfectly, because to be honest with you, had they done things perfectly, there probably wouldn't have been an October 7th, and this conflict wouldn't have happened. However, we are where we are right now. And what's stalling the ceasefire negotiations is Hamas. What started this issue is Hamas. What's making the Gazan lives worse is Hamas. So I don't think I'm being extreme by just pointing out that Hamas is the bigger barrier to peace. This isn't negating the issues that Gazans are facing in this current situation started by Hamas or made worse by Hamas. This isn't saying that people aren't hurting on the ground in Rafah, but the quickest and best way for this to end is essentially Hamas to give up, period. Give back the hostages, or even, to be honest with you, they could accept a ceasefire today. They would get their 1,000 terrorists back, they'd have to release some of the hostages, and then they get 6 weeks, because sure enough, Israel's not going to leave, so therefore, they'll just be attacking in 6 weeks from now. But you know what? At least that's 6 weeks for their people to actually get the aid that they need. But Hamas doesn't want that. Hamas wants to stay in power, and Hamas wants their people to suffer until they get that power. I'm really not that extreme. I'm just placing the blame exactly where it belongs, on the people who started this conflict, who are making this conflict worse, and who are refusing to give up this conflict in order to stay in power at the expense of their own people. And frankly, anybody who's currently ignoring Hamas in this equation, or making excuses for Hamas, or trying to focus solely on the people in Gaza and not mentioning Hamas, you, I think, are extreme. Because the reality is on the ground that Hamas is a big part of this problem. And as long as you're refusing to mention Hamas or include Hamas in this situation, there's no way that we're ever going to solve this Rafah conundrum. This has been another episode of the Jewish Diaspora Report. Don't forget to check us out on social media at jdr.podcast and check out some of our other episodes on your favorite podcast source. We'll see you next time. Yeah.